This is a message from sponsor Intuit TurboTax. Taxes was getting frustrated by your forms. Now Taxes is uploading your forms with a snap, and a TurboTax expert will do your taxes for you. One who's backed by the latest tech, which cross-checks millions of data points for absolute accuracy, all of which makes it easy for you to get the most money back guaranteed. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
First up, let's take a look at the business stories that are making the morning papers. Joining me this morning are Joan Mulvihill, who's digitisation lead at Siemens, and Ronan Reid of Cantor. Thank you both very much for struggling into us this morning after all that weather yesterday. Joan, just the storms, like, it's all over the newspapers and some of the pictures in it are quite extraordinary, really. What was your experience like yesterday?
Well, I live in Mullingar, so we made the 9 o'clock news last night. Obviously, the Midlands got as hit as anywhere else. I know Roscommon got a really bad doing. Look, it's shocking when you think of the number, 720,000 households. Now, I was working that out. If there's an average of three or four people a house, that's nearly half the population have no electricity. And I think one of the things I would love to do on a shout out this morning is, gosh, those ESB networks guys are everywhere. The speed at which they're working, I know they have just come off the back of Storm Dara, which was huge. It was 400,000 houses. This is 720. They've got, I think, about a quarter of a million back already. I know a half a million, if you're one of the half a million, is a long wait. I know most of my family are in that half a million. Yeah. I'm not. I've had electricity. I was out for 4 hours yesterday morning and I got electricity back. So really lucky. But those guys are working around the clock in dangerous conditions still. There's a lot of debris out there still. You know, and then there was snow and ice last night. I drove up from Mullingar this morning. I was de-icing the car at 8:30. So it's going to, you know, discommode a lot of people now for quite some time. And there's obviously threats to people's water supply as well. And obviously taking heed of all the good advice about stocking up on water and candles and being safe and battery operated rather than candles. But it's just epic, the size of it. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting is I read an article this morning, and it's not on our list, but George Lee was talking about this particular kind of storm is less likely to occur in the context of climate crisis than other types of natural disasters. So it really is a very, very exceptional,
a very
storm.
Unique event. Ronan, Joan mentioned there the emergency services trying to deal with this and the likes of the ESB coming off the back of one just, you know, less than 2 weeks ago. That's huge. And the cost of all this really is something that's jumping out from the newspapers today. Maybe take us through some of that.
Yeah, I mean, the cost is significant. Clearly, you're going to have crews as they should be on overtime or other pay. But it's correct that's the focus. A lot of the damage threats and threats to human health and other things occur after the storm. People driving out, hitting branches, hitting trees, power lines down, flooding, which we've seen terrible accidents on in the past. So the quick move to clear up after a storm is really essential over the period. The cost of it will be significant, but that's part and parcel of what we have to deal with. There's no price on safety in human life. Getting power back over a period of time is pretty critical. So I think, yeah, that's the cost of it. I saw the cost as well in terms of the potential cost of what insurers will pay out. I'm quite sure they'll recoup that over time. Like, you know, I'd say household insurance and other forms of insurance. I'm involved as well as Cantor with Tennis Ireland, and I was phoning in a panic because with the government funded the rebuild of two big domes we had. They were saying, please tell me they haven't gone up yet. And they're insured when they are go up. Because the answer is,
because
yeah.
There was a sizable amount of that kind of infrastructural destruction around Dublin in particular yesterday.
Yeah, older equipment, things like domes, weren't built the same way that modern ones are built, where they
adjust
to the
weather. But even the new one in Mayo is gone. That was shocking.
But you're talking about, 180 miles per hour, kilometres per hour winds.
Nothing's going to withstand that.
There's nothing that withstands it. I mean, some of the pictures I saw of trees and other things down was pretty frightening. But that's a cost. I mean, it is what we're going to have to face. It'll be no different than a prolonged cold and snow period where you've got to clear airports, clear everything.
And just interesting you mentioned the tennis there. It's like not just cost on individuals, households, and all of that. There's substantial costs for sporting clubs, you know, damage done to a lot of soccer clubs around the country. Longford Town, I think, you know, and I know that structure, facility is very, it's very substantial. That was devastated yesterday. Joan, one of the other things then, as the other side of that is, you see it in the papers today by a comment piece by Caroline O'Doherty, talking about weather warnings saving lives, so spare us the gripes about personal freedom. You know, in the run-up to this, we had some people kind of saying, look, this is unfair, it's overdramatic, but these guys, they have to warn us. We've got to take precautions.
I totally agree with you. I couldn't agree more. I saw some posts on Instagram yesterday morning, because I had fully functioning broadband and electricity, thank goodness. But people who drove yesterday morning through a shelter in place, red weather warning, because they wanted to go to some business event. I'm sorry, get over yourself. Like, quite frankly, it's not about you. You are not that important. There are, you know, to an event that you cannot stay at home under a shelter in place weather warning where you are putting other people's lives at risk. They may have to go out and rescue you. I just think it's outrageous. And we are not talking about lockdown. We're not talking about endless months. We are talking 4 or 5 or 6 hours. You know, is it worth it to your family? Is it worth it to your business to take those kind of risks for business, for work or whatever you think you're doing? Is it worth it? And I just think the weather warnings are there in place. I know people have been skeptical and they said we've had warnings before and it's not worked out to be that bad. But anyone who looked out the window yesterday morning and thought it was safe or acceptable to get in their car and go somewhere.
And also getting the warnings is really important out to business because they won't be insured for it. So they immediately tell everybody, you stay at home over the period. I think the spectre we've seen of, like, you know, lifeboats having to go out and rescue people going swimming in prior storms, like, yeah, just lunacy, where 4 or 5 people or 8 people are putting their lives at risk for somebody who was foolish in some part, is crazy. So I think there's no tolerance. You get a warning, like, you know, sure, like, people think of the boy who cried wolf, but that doesn't matter. Like, you know, it's the preventative, like, you know, it's the preventative steps of it. And even if you had one where you shouldn't have had the same side, it prepares us as a nation. We now know we get a storm like this, you stay at home, here's the things that you do. And that's just,
and I think this time the authorities did move very swiftly, like closing down schools, advising about hospital appointments. That makes a difference, you know, in kind of persuading the general population that, oh, actually, this is serious. Now, look, we were preparing ourselves at the beginning of this week for Storm Donald Trump. And we had that, plus we had an actual storm. But maybe a storm that many people didn't anticipate was a storm that raged in Dáil Éireann. Of course, this was the government trying to be formed. And when it was formed after that massive row over speaking rights, there was a lot of criticism about the lack of gender balance, Joan, in the makeup of the cabinet.
Yes, I have to say it was disappointing. We're down, the bar was low when we only had 4 before and now we've gone to 3 women, as the joke was going around. There are now more men, there are now more people called James in the cabinet than there are women in the cabinet. Obviously, you know, Hildegard Nocton would have been the other Fine Gael senior woman that could have been in for a shot, and then she got that other, the whip roll instead. So you have 2 Fine Gael.
I don't think she got the whip roll.
Junior ministry. Is that what happened in the end? Sorry, I'm trying to keep up. It has been a busy week. But Jennifer Carroll McNeil and Helen McEntee, and then you've got Norma Foley. So there's 3 women. That's it. And I think the thing is, we don't have depth in numbers throughout the 2 major parties anyway. Mm. And so now we're looking at maybe redressing a bit of that balance in the junior ministries. But that's kind of sad, isn't it? Right? Like, oh, well, you know, we're not putting you on the A team, but, like, we'll make you feel better about it by putting loads of you on the B team. And I'm not suggesting a junior ministry is a B team. I kind of am, but I'm not. But it's just this get out of jail card. And then there was the issue, too, of regional representation. I find that's less of an issue, just in the sense that the majority of the population is in Dublin. But also, to, you know, Norma Foley is great. She ticks 2 boxes because she's from Kerry as well. Mm. So you've got a bit of regional distribution there. But it does tend to feel very Dublin-centric, very male-centric consistently. But we come back to the issue all of the time, getting more women into elected politics. And I say that knowing I would never do it.
Yeah.
And that is a problem.
Yeah.
I'm a woman who is clearly very confident to have an opinion about whatever it might be. I'm engaged in politics and current affairs. It interests me and I wouldn't do it. And I think there has to be something about what Ronan, it is about the career that makes it so unattractive.
Ronan, just as the government would push back on all of that and say, look, actually, there are four women around the cabinet table, although two of them are super juniors. They are all important roles. They would also say, and I know this from my time working with government, that when cabinets are assembled, there is the gender equality for sure has to be an issue and concern. Geography is a massive one. But you have to balance that out with capability and experience. And also, if you look at what the political parties are trying to do with their 40% representation in elections, it's us as well. Like, we're not voting women in.
Yeah, I think there's an element of that. I think a change, no matter what the organisation, whether it's government, whether it's business, takes 5 to 10 years. And you have to plan it from the start. I bring it back to a tennis analogy. Someone said, how do we get number one in the world? I said, well, we have 25 in the top 1,000. You have to build the base and you have to make it more acceptable. It needs to be less male orientated. One of the things I've seen in sport, very involved over the years, is trying to get girls to play boys sports by boys rules doesn't work. So you have to change the approach on it. You have to build the numbers that come in. You have to make it more acceptable.
How do you think they could do that in a better way?
But you start by the women that are there and say, how is it easier? How do you make it? You go out and you survey people and say, why not? Like, what are the things that hold back?
She's a very competent, capable businesswoman and wouldn't consider for a second going into
it. But the first thing it has to be is welcoming. Like, above all else, how do you get somebody to a table? You make it more welcoming. We looked at it in my business. We looked at it in financial services. And I couldn't, like, because we had significant gender diversity. Then we didn't. Then we came back. And I looked back at it and I looked at the interview process, whether we were getting enough candidates, and we weren't. And then we looked at how we advertised the job. We got back into it right at the start, making things too complex, too detailed, too male-orientated. And we changed that and we flipped it on its head. And then it begins to improve. But you have to also have those ministers, the female ministers say, hey, it's not the worst thing in the world. You can do it.
But I don't think it's that I can't do it. And I don't think that it's
the language. Well, why wouldn't you do it then? What would put you on?
I heard a great line once. And it said, cocks crow, hens lay eggs. And that's why women aren't in politics. I know you're making a face there, but I thought it was a really funny and interesting line. And I remember...
What does that mean?
It was this idea that there's more ways of being effective and affecting change
than you wouldn't go in, not because it's a daunting thing, but
no,
because you feel you can get more done
I get more done in other ways. I actually think, I wrote about this years ago, and it's coming up more and more, and I work in tech, and you see it, and we're going to talk about it in a minute, the power that technology companies have, the power that is that the things that are running the world right now are not politicians. They are actually, to a lot of cases, been devalued to kind of admin at the behest of industry. I'm not saying that's the right thing, but I am saying that that is an emerging reality.
So do you think women are smarter for staying out of politics and going more into business?
Well, I can't speak for all the other women, but I know when I was the CEO of a non-profit representative body in the tech industry before. I used to be the CEO of the Irish Internet Association, and someone had said to me then about running in politics, and I said, I get to put forward policy ideas and lobby government from here, from this position, for policies I would like to see enacted. If I go into politics, I am Joan Mulvihill, backbencher, maybe in opposition, maybe not, maybe actually in power, maybe get a junior ministry, maybe get a cabinet ministry. God, I'm 52 years of age. I don't have time.
Well, first
really
of all, you don't
have
52 years of age. But Ronan, that's an interesting point, isn't it? We saw it a bit really over in America on a mega, MAGA scale this week, if you like, the tech bros in the front row with Donald Trump. Maybe politics is diluted. And what Joan is saying is right. Like, it's smarter to have the things you want done via business.
Well, I don't think it's smarter, because I think if you look at the electoral approaches last time, and particularly the demographic of who did and didn't vote, you clearly have a missed opportunity on social media over time. Democratic's left move on social media to make it more appealing, more interesting. I think also people got tired of the fighting. There has been a phrase like, you know, politicians have, like, sometimes, like media, if it doesn't bleed, it doesn't lead. They're young. All these phrases are not. And I don't think they're necessarily fair. I also think sometimes we lack respect for politicians. They are. Those that come at the top are in the best of their game. Whether we like them or don't like them, they've put time into it. I think you address it by saying, over 10 years, we will do it. Like, you know, and you do have to have people who figure what they're good at in terms of, you're saying, from the policy side. And there needs to be others. And they need both role models from within. And maybe break down, well, you would say that's your guy. No, it's not that. It's all of the educational side that sits. I even bring it back further. You and I had a discussion beforehand on single-sex schools. I think they're mad. I think, like, you know, break down a gender balance. Like, we talk about all this, yet we segregate at the school level, which I find amazing.
Yeah, and it comes back to that. If you can't see it, you can't be it. And if you're not integrating and aware.
Yeah.
Just on that, like, before we move on to the other business stories, I have worked with politicians for over 14 years and I've seen firsthand how hard a life that is. There's no other industry that I've ever worked in that has been comparable in terms of the effort that they have to give and the strain it does put on their family. So, look, all of that is for another day.
I did actually say, just to be fair, I did say I'm too selfish to do it. And I did say years ago, I was driving back to my apartment. I was living in Dublin. It was a lovely sunny day. And I had a moment of clarity for myself. And I said, I could never have this peaceful drive if I was in politics. Your time, your life is never your own. Yeah. And I do not underestimate the work that they do.
And
for
most
sure.
of us are afraid, to be honest with you, to stick your toe in that water. Anyway, on to an even more important story, something my husband was very concerned about last night when it popped up. It's a business story. It's about Guinness and Diageo. Ronan, what are they saying?
Well, Diageo have been doing this for a while. I mean, for probably I drink too many pints and I probably drink some whiskey that I shouldn't. But they sold Bushmills at one stage. They moved to more true brands. They've underperformed. CEOs come in. The share price, I think, is down 25% since she arrived. So they're looking at ways to, in part, shore up. Guinness is certainly on the crest of a wave.
Splitting it's going gangbusters at the moment.
Yeah,
isn't it
is.
Like, you can't get it in London.
And you can also be quite cynical and saying the launch. They really experiment with launching new brands. They have over the years as a company. Launching 00 allowed them to advertise to anybody because it's non-alcoholic, which is really which really Never. Worked quite well. Yeah. As a brand itself, will it get sold? I did see a lighter comment. Someone said, use the Apple money and the state would buy it, which I did. I did find quite funny. But I think it wouldn't surprise me that it does get disposed of because I think
how much would a company like that be worth or what it is talking about?
The profitability metrics that'll sit in are really good. They're saying 10 billion. They're not far off. Like, you know, when it comes down to it, you have a number of very large brewers, InBev and others, who have bought into companies and do it. And you have people that are going drinks brand. Also, Diageo would like to be at the premium brand, so it gets to buy out other brands out of LVMH and others, Moët and stuff like that, that they'd like to do and like to be the area. I remember asking about the sale of Bushmills, and it was because in part of the transaction involved getting a tequila brand, which was very popular at the time. So it does happen. It happens over the years. There's a funny one always by Guinness back to 1700s. The wine crop failed and the first fungus, and they said wine would never be drunk again. Guinness actually went massively up. The family sold it for a huge price. The people that bought it lost an awful lot of money, and the family bought it back over time. So you get these fads between alcohol, between beer, and between spirit level alcohol. For a while, people are taken by surprise in Guinness because spirits were really selling very, very strongly. But Guinness has come sharply back in, and their advertising is very strong. And, like, you know, how they pick it, how they
They're
target.
So clever, aren't
yeah, they?
They
are. So I think it wouldn't surprise me at all that it got sold. People do brand portfolio changes, very much driven by the senior management and pressure. You have a new CFO, relatively new CEO, and a new chairman coming in. So the first thing they'll look at is strategic review of a business, and I suspect that's where it's coming out. They also float this to see what interest there is elsewhere, and it's quite effective.
Yeah, Joan, that's the bit I was going to ask you about. You know, Ronan touched on it there. They're such clever marketeers. What do you think is behind this? Do you think they will actually sell, or is this a kick in the tires?
It could be a kicking of the tires, a flying of a kite. It seems strange. Like, I remember back in 1997, like, you know, when it became Diageo, and I was living in London at the time, and it was like huge news. The idea of it happening again, it feels like a distant memory. The idea of it not being in Diageo or part of that portfolio. But it's strange to be here this morning talking about this story, because I was in here with Bobby literally the Saturday before Christmas talking about you can't get a pint in London and it's all about splitting the G. I'd been at a gig the week before. It was an American guy, Kishi Bashi, was playing in the Button Factory and he was roared at to split the G, split the G. And it's like really having this moment. So I suppose from their point of view, this could be more of their, you know, brand cachet. It's like, oh my goodness, it could be sold. But obviously, you know much more about this than I do, Ronan. So I'm going to defer to...
I think it wouldn't surprise me if they sold and bought back their own shares. That's what a lot of companies do. Yeah. The other one, just lighter moment, because they talked about splitting the G. There was another one that they actually missed. I knew a whole bunch of people on a Friday who used to call it the 1 minute to sixth because all the pint glasses used to have 1759, the 1759 club, and they go out to do it. So that should be their next advertising campaign.
Very good.
On a Friday, have a beer.
Very good. There's a new idea for free from Ronan for you. Joan, just a story that was picked up from the Financial Times. Marco Rubio demands immediate halt to virtually all US funded. This is huge, really, isn't it?
This is huge. And the news like this is coming thick and fast all week from America. And you're looking at this going, what? So they've stalled all aid. US Agency for International Development, worth billions of dollars spanning countries all around the world. This is going to be huge for a lot of NGOs around the world, you know, trying to really... It is all a doubling down, a tripling down on absolutely everything about putting America first. The line here is every dollar we spend, every program we fund and every policy we pursue must be justified to answer simple questions. Does it make America safer? And does it make America stronger? Does it make America more prosperous? I mean, that is an absolute hardcore Trumpian perspective. I think the issue, the bit that saddened me or freaked me out probably the most is that all international aid would be gone except to Israel and Egypt.
Yeah.
And I mean, just sick, kind of saddens your heart. And when I listened to Donald Trump the other day and was asked about Gaza in particular, he was eyeing it up like, well, you know, it's a great location, sunny by the beach, great weather. Yeah. I'm going, what does he plan doing? Building Mar-a-Lago there? Like, is that...
And you also have a cabinet now that is run, that are billionaires and people. So what's the first thing you do? This is a playbook partly out of Musk's when you see it.
Which absolutely.
Is when he bought X, and the first thing he did was say, get everybody back to work. Now justify your existence. And that would be the same when people are running a business and they hit a problem. They say, hey, let's stop and then put everything back in the hopper, review everything. And that's what they're doing. The note of caution for me is back into also Ireland, because the increase in rhetoric that maybe tariffs and other things, they're watering down the message on tariffs quite a lot and a focus to China and other comments in Canada. But they constantly make the reference to the 155 billion trade deficit in Europe. Ireland's about 45 billion of that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so it is get prepared and get out. One thing I was happy to see was Pascal Donohue back as finance minister. He's probably who you would want in the seat of saying, how do we get out ahead of this in some way? We look at our tax treaties. We look at other things to mitigate any obvious threat to parts of our business.
Yeah, the stories, as you say, have been coming thick and fast all week. Shock and awe is how somebody referenced it to me about the amount of... finance, tax, geopolitical stuff that's just been trotted out all week. But one thing that it hasn't stopped is interest in Doonbeg. Very briefly, Joan, the golfers are flocking back to pay to go to Doonbeg again.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. Well, I suppose in inevitability to a 25,000 a year to be a member of Doonbeg. Green fees are up 525 euros, up to 525, I think. It's been their busiest year ever. Most of that is coming from American demand, and maybe we'll be as picky with people coming to visit here as he's going to get people visiting there. But no, it's look at, if you're living in Doonbeg and you're employing people down there, I'm sure it's a great day for you. And, you know, that's what it is. But I just think I find it hard to celebrate something that is just about economic gain. And I think that's what all of this is about. Everything in the other policy, it's all about making America great. It's all about who's making the most money. And so now I'm going to have to celebrate a story that the nice people in Doonbeg are making a load of money now and it's really good and prosperous for the town. But at what cost? And I can't get past that. And, you know, I feel bad saying that because obviously this is in County Clare, it's here, but...
There's a great phrase on golf. I'm a tennis player, not a golfer, so all my golfing friends will probably kill me for this. It's a great book that was written called A Good Walk Spoiled. And you have a lot of golf courses that do change the topography of the land and other areas over time. But it's inevitable. I would say most of those golfers are already in Hogshead because that seems to be full of Americans and planes and helicopters going in. So,
From a sustainability point of view, which they clearly don't care about, I mean, golf courses are not the most sustainable use of land, for sure.
Look, as you say there, Ronan, it's all transactional now, isn't it, really, around Trump and business. But look, it's no doubt a story that's going to continue to deliver and we'll have to watch with interest in the coming weeks and indeed years ahead. We're going to have to leave the papers there, sadly. There's lots more we wanted to get to, but time is upon us. My thanks, though, this morning to Joan Mulvihill and Ronan Reid for coming into studio and you know, especially you, Joan, for coming up from Mullingar. We really do appreciate it. Thank you both very much.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
This is a message from sponsor Intuit TurboTax. Taxes was getting frustrated by your forms. Now Taxes is uploading your forms with a snap, and a TurboTax expert will do your taxes for you. One who's backed by the latest tech, which cross-checks millions of data points for absolute accuracy, all of which makes it easy for you to get the most money back guaranteed. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.